Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am your host, Gary Gramling. I am joined by both Jenny Brentis and Connor Orr of the Weekside Podcast for the finale of the quadrilogy. Let that wash over you for a moment before we start the show.
Wow.
Yeah. That's,
that is a
special
word.
It feels momentous. Quadrilogy is one of my favorite words. Probably my second favorite word after penultimate. Penultimate should be my second favorite word, though. That would be more fitting.
But... are there any famous quadrilogies? Like The Godfather is a trilogy.
Who came out with like a... That's the thing. Who came out with a fourth and then stopped?
I mean, I'm at a severe disadvantage here because we all know my lack of pop culture knowledge, so... Not really sure I have anything to offer here, but I am Googling four-part series to see if I can quickly come up with something that would allow me to contribute.
Would Fast and Furious count as a double quadrilogy?
No.
Or did
that's
the fact that they went to Fast and Furious XL mean that they're planning on just bypassing? I mean, there's got to be more than eight of those.
Is octilogy a word?
Octilogy.
For now?
I mean, if you're Vin Diesel, you get to make up words, so.
Yeah,
Hannibal Lecter has four parts, apparently.
Hmm. Okay. I feel, once you go past three, you just go to, 17. Like, you just go to some random number until everyone involved has passed on or retired or whatever it might be. No one stops at four. That's
Parent Trap has four parts. 1, 2, 3, and Hawaiian Honeymoon.
Okay. That's a quadrilogy then.
Were those all Lindsay Lohan?
Good question. I don't know, Connor. I'm just really trying to keep up here, so just offering what I can. I don't have all the information. Pretty much my general contribution for the podcast is at that level. So,
well, guys, we're doing a quadrilogy. Because this will be the last one, because they're doing the draft on Thursday, and we are we're through the first 25 picks in this series so far. We are starting with the Browns at 26, and I'm going to ever so quickly run through the first 25 in case any of you listeners out there are just rude enough to have missed the first three shows. So, we have Jaguars taking Trevor Lawrence, Jets take Zach Wilson, 49ers Trey Lance, Falcons take Penei Sewell, Bengals take Rashawn Slater, Dolphins take Ja'Marr Chase, Lions take Devontae Smith, Panthers take Justin Fields. At 9, the Broncos take Mac Jones, Cowboys take Patrick Surtain, Giants take Kyle Pitts, Eagles take Jalen Waddle, Christian Darrisaw to the Chargers, Jalen Phillips to the Vikings, Patriots take Micah Parsons, Cardinals take Caleb Farley. Now this is part 3 coming on, we could have stopped there, but we kept going. J.C. Horn to the Raiders, Elijah Vera Tucker to the Dolphins, Football team selects Tevin Jenkins. Bears take Greg Newsome. Colts take Quiddy Pay. Titans take Eric Stokes. Jets take Gregory Rousseau. Steelers take Liam Eichenberg. And the Jaguars take Christian Barmore. And now we have arrived at the Browns with number 26. And they're kind of solid on this roster. I mean, a lot of teams we're going to talk about in this portion of the show are solid on the roster because they all won a lot of games. The Browns have done a nice job filling those few holes, at least theoretically, in free agency here.
Yeah, what a time to say that the Browns have a pretty solid roster. The biggest needs, I think, are on defense. Edge rusher makes sense, although the signing of Jadeveon Clowney makes that need a little bit less acute. I could also see them going linebacker here.
I agree with Jenny, and I like the fact that I think the Clowney signing really opened up some doors. In particular, it reminds me a little bit of the Giants before that first Super Bowl run where they had two established players on the outside, and then they could kind of take a flyer on someone like a Jason Pierre-Paul who is kind of experimental and ease him in, kind of running him on obvious passing downs, and then sort of increasing his workload from there. And it's almost perfect for Cleveland because that's sort of the class that you're going to get, right? It's high ceiling guys who might not have a ton of production. There's a player on the board. I'm you know, hint, hint, that went to Jenny's alma mater that a lot of people are kind of describing as that similar, but, you know, didn't even have a sack last year, but the athletic ceiling is through the roof and might be able to fit in there. But I agree. I mean, I think they're in such a good spot to bring in a guy, to foster him, and, you know, Clowney just is that anchor there, and it really helps you kind of work some stuff around.
Yeah, I really like the idea of Clowney kicking inside on some of these obvious passing downs here, and then that opens you up to you can take a Jason Owa or a Joe Tryon or someone like that, and he's sort of a pure edge guy to just throw out there in certain packages. That said, I do agree with Jenny. I think this is a linebacker spot right here. If you're Joe Woods, you know, he was obviously he was the defensive backs coach in San Francisco, but I mean, he saw in that defense what Robert Saleh was able to do with that Fred Warner, Quan Alexander pairing. And I think they have some maybe interesting younger guys there in that linebacking core, but I don't know if they have anyone really banking on at this point. So at this point in the draft, and they're going to have options here as far as linebackers go. In this point in our draft, you still have Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa on the board. You still have Zaven Collins on the board. You still have Jamin Davis on the board. Those are probably your three guys after Micah Parsons here. So good times here for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, no matter who was off the board at that point, or rather, there should still be a very good linebacker for them to take, is what I was going to say. And also, it is interesting, Gary, you mentioned it's a good linebacker draft, and this is a copycat league, and we saw the Super Bowl champions win in large part because of their excellent defense, and mm-hmm. that defense has two really strong inside linebackers. And so, you know, when the Bucs drafted Devin White fifth overall a couple years ago, I think some heads were turned, like, that's really high for an off-ball linebacker. But you saw the impact that a player like that can have on the defense. And so I think a lot of teams are looking to address that need a little bit more.
I debated at the beginning of this podcast, once I kind of caught on and understood what was going on, it would be to not offer anything, but just to say, we're going to take the best player available. And you know, we're gonna take the top guy on our board. And but in this case, I think you could probably match the best player available and the top guy on everybody's board. There's some good linebackers here.
Yeah, Connor, that approach will get you a job at front office somewhere by the time the offseason is up. Look, as far as our board goes, I like Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa here. I think he has a lot of similarities to Fred Warner, of course, a great linebacker out in San Francisco. If he wasn't off the board, like I said, I really like Jamin Davis in the spot in a scenario where JOK is not on the board anymore. But I think for the sake of our mock, I think it's the Notre Dame dude going right here.
Sounds good, Gary.
Is JOK a nickname that you have given him, or is that something that has been percolating for some time?
I saw Jess Smetana called him JOK on Twitter, okay. the wonderful video producer who actually just left Sports Illustrated. So now we don't think she's wonderful, but I will go with that.
All right, so she would know, Notre Dame grad.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's just easier. I can't.
It's great. It's an enjoyable nickname. I mean,
I have enough trouble speaking without having to run through that many syllables.
Sounds good.
All right, that brings us to the Ravens at 27. We're going to have a very Raven-centric show. You might say that's so Raven. By the time this is over, that was pretty good. You got that one right, Jenny.
I legitimately laughed. That was a legitimate laugh.
Thank you. Thank you for your pity. The Ravens at 27 here, obviously they just moved on from Orlando Brown. Orlando Brown wanted to play left tackle. They are not going to have him play left tackle with Ronnie Stanley there. So he is off to Kansas City. You have a big hole here at right tackle. And like we said, this is a good draft if you need, I hate to keep throwing out, you know, left tackle types and right tackle types, because it's there's no difference in the NFL anymore. I mean, you need them both to be able to do a lot of the same things. But just if we are using the old stereotype of the left tackle being the athletic pass protector type and the right tackle being the big mauler type of dude, there are a lot of those right tackle types in this draft, and that's certainly what the Ravens look for in this system.
Yeah, losing Orlando Brown was, you know, it's one of those interesting things where I wondered how much they would at least try to pacify him just because he does fit that downhill blocking style so well, and he's such a powerful player and gives them flexibility to, you know, do a lot of the things that they do on both sides of the line. But you're right. I mean, you know, they have two picks here back to back, and while theoretically they've done a really good job in the past at utilizing that spot to maybe trade back and accumulate more assets, they're desperate for both a wide receiver and an offensive lineman, and I think they can probably accomplish those pretty successfully here with 27 and 31.
Yeah, and we know a big part of the Ravens' draft strategy is just taking more chances, so accumulating picks, so that understanding that you were going to miss on some, that every team misses on some, and just basically taking more bites at the apple. So you see two picks in the late first round and you think, well, could they, you know, make some move up or, you know, get creative in some way, but they could also just stay where they are because they have these two chances to get two impact players. So, and there are a lot of needs, you know, wide receiver, edge rusher, and now offensive tackle. I mean, when I did my mock a couple weeks ago, the Brown trade hadn't happened, although it was imminent, and now I'm feeling silly for not giving them one of the offensive tackles at that spot. So I think those are the three positions that make a lot of sense for the Ravens at the back end of the first round.
So as far as the specific prospects at this point, you're probably looking at a Jalen Mayfield out of Michigan. Just scrolling through our list here to see who else sort of pops up as pure offensive tackles. I mean, you can go with an Alex Leatherwood out of Alabama. Lord knows the Ravens enjoy their Alabama prospects here. Sam Cosmi out of Texas, who I like, but no one else seems to like him that much. Yeah, let's narrow it down to those three. I would In sort of vague terms here, I would call Mayfield kind of the high upside guy, but you're bringing a little more risk. I think Leatherwood is probably the guy they'd be more comfortable with for a number of reasons. He played different spots on Alabama's line over the years, and granted, Alabama is obviously stacked offensively, so I don't know if that worries evaluators overall when you're just playing amongst a bunch of other NFL players against a bunch of, you know, generally not NFL players, but Leatherwood performed well at tackle. He performed well at guard. I think he's a guy who fits in their system pretty well. And then you got, Cosmi, I think, is more going to appeal to teams looking to develop sort of a pure pass protector type of guy, as opposed to a team like the Ravens, who are fine. They're going to run the ball a whole lot every game. So that's my two cents, guys.
Well, I have a question, Gary. Mm-hmm. So you would go for offensive tackle at this pick and not wait till the pick 31 and maybe get an edge here?
I think the way the board plays out for us, I would probably go tackle here and trust that either... That's the thing with the Ravens system. I never... whenever I do their draftings, it's like I never think of edge being a big need, because it seems like they just always, you know, they'll get a Matt Judon on, you know, day two or late or early day three and develop these guys, and they will they'll manufacture this pass rush with whoever they end up with. Whereas I think they got a little bit of a rude awakening last year after Marshall Yanda left, and they kind of said, okay, you know, we'll try Tyree Phillips. They tried a couple other guys at that right guard spot, and it just, they didn't completely collapse. I think a lot of their struggles on offense ended up being related to a big downturn in red zone efficiency, but they certainly did not dominate in the way that they did in 2019. And I think that sort of was a signal to them that they probably want offensive line. I mean, certainly they'll take offensive line with one of these two picks. I always feel like the Ravens will just wait on the edge guys, and they'll you know, those overload fire zone blitzes, they'll go with that, and they'll just kind of say, you know, we want edge guys who aren't necessarily your classic edge burning dynamic guys. We just want guys who do a lot of things well, and we'll manufacture this pass rush when it's all said and done.
Fair enough.
Can I raise my hand and ask, do you think that, you know, with the Saints coming up here at 28, with the Aaron Rodgers sassiness coming up at 29, the weapon desperate Bills coming up at 30, are you nervous at all about the last first round caliber wide receiver still sitting there on the board? Just raising that possibility that Rashad Bateman is available. Is a guy that I think will go in the first round of the draft, could fit in well with that, you know, gives them another true outside guy, well, probably their only really true outside guy. So just a suggestion.
Can I be a mock draft jerk for a second?
Sure.
I always like mocking Bateman to the Packers because I think he fits what they do better than what he fits to the Ravens. And I was like putting Terrace Marshall Jr., the LSU guy, with the Ravens because I think he's a little more, or at least he has a chance to be sort of a classic X receiver type of guy. And that is not how draft boards work. But if both teams call me and we're like, listen, we just want to make you happy with these receiver picks, so just let us know who we should pick in each spot, that's what I would tell them. And that's why I would put Marshall here for giving him a receiver and give Bateman to the Packers in two picks.
We're really totally eliminating all the suspense here for the listeners. I know. Now. I mean,
I would love if Brian Gutekunst was like, yeah, you know, you're right. He's a better player for you guys. What was I thinking trying to take him?
It's about getting the right fit for everyone so everyone leaves the draft happy. This is not a competition. This is so everyone gets the guy they want.
It's about happiness.
Well, what do you guys think? I would, if we're going offensive line, I would pencil in Leatherwood. If we are going receiver, we can give him Bateman here. It'll shatter my heart to not give him to the Packers in two picks, but we can go ahead and do that.
That's fine. We can stick with offensive line, Gary.
My goal is for you to leave here feeling good. And so I say we do that. Yeah, I say we stick him with Leatherwood. Although I will raise one last point. The other tackle that we're debating here went to Michigan. We know that John Harbaugh probably has some good information on all the players from there, and you know, that either means you could almost pencil him in to Baltimore, or you would not pencil him in at all based on the brother's evaluation. But just would that supersede their obsession with Alabama is all I'm saying.
That's a good point. Mayfield does fit stylistically what they look for, in their offensive linemen. So I don't know. We'll find out a lot about Jalen Mayfield if he's sitting there at 27 and the Ravens either take or pass on him.
Seriously. Let's go Leatherwood.
I was going to say, I already started typing it, so really, no going back. I broke my backspace key years ago, so whatever I type the first time has to be right. All right, Alex Leatherwood, Alabama offensive tackle to the Ravens at 27, which brings us to the Saints at 28. And this is a team, look, quarterback is what everyone's going to kind of wonder about. Is there someone else who would sneak into round one, a Davis Mills type guy? If you are getting away from quarterback, they had to change up a lot of things this offseason. They were in a very bad cap situation. They have a need at number two cornerback. They have a need at linebacker. Do they try and develop, they took Marcus Davenport, they jumped up and got him a couple years ago. Do they pull a similar move and try and get someone like that at this spot? There's a lot of different ways the Saints can go.
Yeah, cornerback is a major need. That one really popped out to me when I was doing my mock draft. Janoris Jenkins left in free agency. They're looking for a starter opposite Marshawn Lattimore. Depending on how first rounds play out, there could be a lot of good options left. I think I gave them Asante Samuel Jr., which maybe was a little high. So that's one option. But you mentioned quarterback. That's another consideration.
Is Mac Jones still available, Gary?
He's not. We gave him to the Broncos at 9.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I agree with Jenny. I think cornerback is probably at the top of the wish list here, and I would say probably followed only slightly by wide receiver, but only the right kind of wide receiver if you're trying to make this work.
they'll have to ask the Packers who they're allowed to pick here.
Exactly.
I do wonder, you know, they've had Tre'Quan Smith there for a couple of years. I guess you kind of wonder, are they going to kind of shrug their shoulders and be like, all right, well, you've been here. You know the system. You better be ready to go at this point now that Emmanuel Sanders is out. But, boy, we took a lot of cornerbacks in this draft so far, didn't we? Or did I just accidentally? Did we give someone Greg Newsome? We did. We gave the Bears Greg Newsome. That's right. Greg Newsome homecoming to Chicago. How could I forget? This is the storyline of the first round in our imaginary world. So we are digging down a little bit deeper on the corners. Farley is off the board. This is good podcasting here, just me sort of mumbling to myself and grunting as I look at a list. Samuel makes sense. Molden is a... I think Molden's a little... Elijah Molden out of Washington is probably a little too repetitive with CJ... Gardner Johnson there. I could go with Asante Samuel here.
I mean, sounds good to me. If I'm going to miss in one mock draft, I might as well miss in both, Gary.
Connor, any objections?
Asante Samuel Jr. seems great. It's interesting. Like, he's not like beloved by some of the mock draft consiglieri or whatever, but some of the advanced metrics on him are like phenomenal. Like, he really does seem to be like a one hell of a player. And so I think that, you know, and all these cornerbacks are so strange in the way that they're stacked up. Like, I think there's a lot of project picks early on that might jump ahead of him just based on measurables. There's some medical guys that might fall, but Asante Samuel Jr. is one of those guys that I feel like is on the safe side, if anything, and is a player who's sort of lived up to the expectations of him already. And so I like the pick.
All right, Asante Samuel Jr., Florida State cornerback to the Saints, which brings us to the Packers, who there's just a great receiver fit on the board here if you're the Packers, and I don't see how you can go in any other direction besides Rashad Bateman at this point.
What a surprise, Gary. I would never have guessed that you would have paired them, but that sounds like a really interesting combination.
Maybe another really friendly GM let him slide, so that's good.
That's why you network if you're a GM and you get everyone on your side and they do you favors. That's why the Ravens always do so well in the draft. Everyone just sort of helps them out. Everyone likes Eric DaCosta.
You can have Lamar Jackson. We don't need him. Go ahead.
No, I like Bateman as sort of a... I would categorize Bateman as sort of a savvy type of receiver. I don't think he's going to blow anyone away with the... With the size, speed, measurables here, but I think he very much he's an on-schedule route runner. I think he's a savvy route runner. I think he's going to create separation. I think, like a lot of Packers receivers, it might be a rough transition. If you look over the years, guys in their first year or two with Aaron Rodgers tend to not fare very well, and then they sometimes tend to fare very well going forward. Davante Adams, do you guys remember, Davante Adams was like, his first 2 years in the league, he was terrible. He was like, he was problematically bad for them. And then all of a sudden, he just took off on this new trajectory, and now he's completely unstoppable.
Well, the question is, Gary, will Aaron Rodgers still be the quarterback for the Packers when this wide receiver begins his upward trajectory?
If I'm the GM of the Packers, I'm done. Like, if I know you're going to pout again anyway, I'll draft Kyle Trask here. Give me another quarterback. I'll do it again. You know, let's do, who cares? But Yeah, no, if I know you're going to pout and use the media as a tool to bring up the fact that he's never had a first-round pick as a wide receiver, like, it's the same principle where if you have a kid and, you know, they're not treating their toys well, and, you know, then you don't get the new toys from the store. You get the toys from Facebook Marketplace and, you know, the ones with the scratches on them already. And so that's the thing. You know, maybe you don't deserve a linebacker here. Maybe we are a wide receiver. Maybe we help out the defense a little bit, too, you know. But yeah, I do agree with you stylistically. He does fit there. And, you know, you can see him. You watch that tape from Minnesota, and it's like that receiver that you can just see winning that kind of that back shoulder fade, you know, kind of winning some of those 50-50 balls that Rodgers rolls his eyes at other people for not winning. You know, I mean, he is that kind of caliber wide receiver. And if you're going off of 2019 film, which a lot of teams seem to be doing at this point, you have to remember, like, he had a downturn statistically in 2020, but played, you know, weeks after a really bad symptomatic case of COVID that forced him to use his inhaler for the first time. He had asthma, never needed to use it before he had COVID, and said he just now is like feeling physically better after like months of feeling off for COVID. But he ran well at the pro day, so I like it. I think it's a good pick here.
All right, it's going to be Rashad Bateman to the Packers, and if you're a Packers fan, you're going to have to wait till day two to find that Tim Boyle replacement in the QB room. Number 30, Buffalo Bills. And look, I love what the Bills have done from a roster building standpoint. I have been very annoyed, however, at the fact that they never go out and try to get that sort of dynamic edge rusher, like just take a risk on that athletic sort of, you know, measurables type guy, high ceiling type of dude.
You don't think, I mean, Ed Oliver isn't an edge, but you know, you don't think that Ed Oliver was a similar.
No, I want pure edge. I want an edge burner here. Okay. Really, it comes down to, I was annoyed when they signed Trent Murphy that one offseason because it just didn't. Trent Murphy's fine, but like Trent Murphy's like, you know, your I don't know, ninth best starter on your team at the point when they signed him, and he just didn't really seem to be what they needed at this point. And I'll say this, I don't have the stats on this, but I feel like the Bills led the league in successfully called blitzes that didn't end up in like a good play for them because they like didn't finish the sack or ran past the quarterback or grabbed the quarterback and the quarterback slipped away and made a play. And maybe I'm just thinking of the two games against Patrick Mahomes that sort of stick in my craw as not a Bills fan, but a person who has a soft spot for the franchise in my heart. But yeah, I just want them to take that dominating potential. You're not going to get a dominating, you're not going to find Chase Young at number 30 in this draft, but just take the guy who has a chance to become that, essentially what Jerry Hughes is at this point. And Jerry Hughes probably will not play forever. I don't know how many years he has left, but it's probably not infinity at this point. So I really hope the Bills do that with one of these kind of high ceiling edge rushers. And we still do have a couple on the board in our exercise here.
Yeah, the way that our board has fallen, there are a lot of options. I see Owa from Penn State, as Connor mentioned earlier, Azeez Ojulari from Georgia. We also have, who else do we have here? I there was another name that popped out to me that I just lost on the list.
Oh, Joe Tryon,
right. So yeah, there are a lot of good edge rushers. But yeah, this is an interesting edge rusher class overall because there were a decent amount of players who were very productive in 2019 and then opted out. You have Jalen Phillips, who went very high in our mock draft, but has some of the medical question marks after wrist reconstruction and multiple concussions that actually led him to retiring from football temporarily before resuming his career at Miami. So I think with most of the edge rushers, there are some questions. You don't know exactly what you're getting, or maybe your evaluation isn't as clean as you thought it would be, which leaves the Bills, I think, in a pretty good position to get a good edge rusher late in the first round. But you sort of have to pick right. You know, you don't want, you want to get a guy that that has the talent there that can be harnessed, rather than one of the guys who has, you know, some limitations that, and then those ultimately don't work out.
Yeah, I agree. You know, Buffalo's interesting. Like, I think Buffalo is going to spend a, I still think Buffalo's going to make a weird, like, trade here. I don't think they're done. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they trade, like, a second-round pick or, like, a combo some mid-round picks for, like, Zach Ertz, for example. You know, like, I think they're going to do something weird there, which makes sense then that you can kind of elevate yourself defensively, because it was pedestrian a little bit. I mean, you need a couple things. You need to help at cornerback if you're the Bills. You know, you reinvested in that linebacker group in the offseason, but and you need help on the edge, too. And, you know, Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier are good enough to cover up for a lot of that stuff, but I think we all saw the shortcomings when you're trying to elevate from a team that is now good enough to win the AFC East with regularity versus a team that now needs to be built to beat the Chiefs, essentially.
Yeah, they, I mean, look, they wanted a tight end in free agency this year, and they just, they didn't get any other guys. They, you know, they checked in on Gronk. They checked in on the dude to end up signing with the Patriots, and they just didn't land any of them. So, you know, how comfortable are you living with Dawson Knox at this point? I think it would be nice if they added a tight end. I don't know who it would be at this juncture of the draft. I think there's just such a sharp drop-off after Kyle Pitts, obviously, which there would be anyway, because everyone's much worse than Kyle Pitts at football. But, I mean, I think the other guys you're talking about, you're probably looking at in round two at this point, and I don't know if any of them are necessarily big upgrades over Dawson Knox, and not to mention you just... your offense is kind of fine. You just brought back the entire offensive line. You have plenty in the receiving core. You just brought in Emmanuel Sanders to replace John Brown. They're going to be fine offensively. I think you need some difference makers on defense, and I think this is where you take the big swing. And I personally love Azeez Ojulari. I think I mentioned on the last segment. He's just so fast around the edge, and he's a little bit undersized, but I don't think he plays that small. I think he's a potential difference maker. And, you know, I don't know. Jason Owe, I really like Jason Owe. I have no problem with the fact that he had the no-sack season. It was, one, a seven-game season, and two, I don't know, if he had, like, two or three, like, garbage cleanup sacks, would we all feel different about it? He was still disruptive, and he's still a really good talent. So just because he has this sort of weird statistical anomaly, I don't think is that big a deal at this point. But those are the two guys I would circle here. I like Joe Tryon a lot, too. But out of the three, I would probably order it Ojulari, then Owe, then Tryon.
Yeah, I agree. I'm actually surprised Ojulari is still here on our board, and I would be a little surprised if he got to the Bills on Thursday night. But since he is still here, he would be my pick as well.
I agree. Hear, hear.
What a wonderful moment in Western New York as they land Azeez Ojulari at the 30th pick.
If we were the Bills brain trust, we'd all do that weird staged handshake that a lot of the draft the war rooms are doing now. You know, can they can be in person now, right? Because everybody's vaxxed.
Yeah,
they're all vaxxed to the max. So they can do that.
The Rams
are getting a house together, and they don't even have any picks.
The Rams are getting a house that I noticed. I don't know why this bothered me so much. There's there's a sponsor of this swimming pool, it looks like.
Yeah.
I don't know if I saw that right.
You did. I noticed that as well. It's like projected onto the water.
I don't want to
do that.
Yeah. We're not
going
to say
go
it.
In.
Yeah, we're not going to say it because, like, why give, you know? Why give unnecessary publicity? But yeah, that really bothered me as well, Gary.
It was just weird. Like yeah, we got this house, and the pool is sponsored? Is the house sponsored? Is there going to be like a...
Is the pool sponsored by something bad?
No.
Okay. I honestly don't even remember who it was.
Oh,
I just remember seeing there was a...
I felt like we weren't going to say it because it was like... Never mind.
No, just like, why give free publicity?
Sure. Yeah,
but it was just like not something you'd associate with the swimming pool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was not like...
I guess it makes sense in some regard.
Who makes pools? It wasn't Inflatable Pool Toy Inc. It was okay. It was just a random company at the bottom of the
Hershey's chocolate swimming pool. Well,
that would be delicious. I'd love that.
Yeah, big fondue. Okay, yeah, I'm down. I think this is great. But yeah, we'd all do that thing where we all, you know, we kind of like not like hold each other's hands and shake them. I think like the Cowboys do that because like maybe Jerry Jones is just a little bit older, but they all just like kind of shake each other's hands in the air. We'll all do that because Ojulari is tremendous value at this pick.
You see it. It'll happen as soon as you see the pick is in. They will cut to us doing that, and then they'll cut to the pick, and then you'll see why. 31, we are back to the Ravens, and I guess we're back to the conversation. Do we go edge here, or do we get them the receiver here?
Interesting, Gary. It seems as though there is a receiver that someone has suggested recently would be an excellent fit for the Ravens offense. And while, you know, I actually have to say that as soon as Eric DaCosta said, "We don't have a needed receiver," I was like, oh, they're definitely taking a receiver. And of course, yes, this was after I did my mock draft. But that was like a classic redirection. Like, I just felt like it was so obvious. I would be now, of course, I'm saying this again, after I did my mock draft without giving the Ravens a receiver, I would now be stunned if they did not take a receiver in the first round.
They didn't even ask him about receiver. He just like walked up to the mic. They're like, "How's it going, Eric?" And he's like, "We do not need a receiver.
We will not be addressing that position high in this draft. Definitely not."
That's funny. Yeah, no, I think that there's no way. I mean, this team has been unsecretly desperate at the position for years. I mean, Lamar Jackson was pounding the table for Antonio Brown at this time last year. I mean, that's how kind of desperate everybody got at some point or another to bring him in. And you ended up with Dez Bryant at that position for some time. Like, this, they were you know, down to the wire with Juju Smith-Schuster. Like, this team badly needs help at that position. And, you know, I know that was for a long time, Ozzie Newsome's kind of one white whale position. I remember year after year at the Combine, him talking about that difficulty in hitting at that spot. You know, he took a lot of swings and misses, ended up having to bring in someone like Steve Smith, which was good for them for a while. But yeah, no, this is they need to hit on this. I don't think there's any other way. It's the only way to open up their offense, because the tight end class isn't good enough to maybe grab an additional wrinkle guy here.
Yeah, it's so strange to think anyone's struggling to find receivers in the modern NFL, where, I mean, the league is just so oversaturated with incredibly good wide receivers, and the Ravens just seem to have not been able to find that. I mean, Hollywood Brown has been fine. I think Hollywood Brown is ultimately more of a very good complementary piece in your passing game. But you look at, you know, Miles Boykin just hasn't quite worked out. Rashad Perriman didn't work out as a first round pick in 2015, although he's had some nice moments in other cities. But yeah, it's just, when we see on Thursday night, I think ultimately some of these receivers who we expect to go round one might slip out of the first round, and if they do, it's just because it's an important position, but there's just so much talent at the position in the league in this draft, and 2022 is also projecting to be an obscenely talented and deep receiver class coming in. So a lot of teams are saying, well, you know, we'll wait until day two and we'll get our AJ Brown, and hopefully that doesn't become our JJ Arcega-Whiteside. But that's how a lot of teams will end up approaching it. After all that, look, Terrace Marshall Jr. Out of LSU is the guy I like here. The one thing that gives me pause is I think he was more effective as sort of a big slot at LSU, but I think he has the tools to be sort of that classic X receiver in this offense, which is what you're looking for if you already have Marquise Brown. And Frank, you can take Mark Andrews and sort of play him flexed out and do some things you might do with, you know, sort of a classic move receiver. But I like Marshall here a lot, which I have said repeatedly over the last 45 minutes to you guys, so I'm just going to write it in now.
Sounds great, Gary.
I'm falling into the typical trap of, like, every fan on mock draft night where, like, there's some really good players that are left here, and, you know, and I'm just like, God, I can't believe all these players are left. But, like, the only reason that we all think they're good players, Well, I guess we do call people and talk to people, but it's like the idea that like they're on all these big boards and we just haven't drafted them yet. But I think it's cool that we're not doing that. We're not following the norm. You know, we're shaking things up a little bit, which I'm very excited about.
We don't.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Gary.
I was just saying, just a quick reminder, we're also not allowed to trade, so we can't really change this up to have someone jumping up and getting Zaven Collins or a Kadarius Toney or something like that anyway.
Yeah, it's also a weird year in that it really does feel like without the combine, there's just like a much greater lack of anchor points for what teams might do or consensus building on players. Like, I'm sure those conversations go on around the league with scouts out on the road, but you are missing that kind of central convention hub where you get a sense for what different people think about different prospects.
We are at the last pick of the first round, and of course we have four teams we're still going to address here because they don't have first round picks, but they're still teams and they still deserve our love and they deserve to have us say what they've done wrong with their rosters and what they need now. But we are at the Bucks at 32, who they won the Super Bowl in February, if you didn't see that. If you're looking at the roster, I don't know what you'd necessarily say is a weakness on this roster, but they're certainly, they're advanced in age in a lot of spots, and that includes quarterbacks. So you do wonder if they, you know, if they love a Davis Mills, Kyle Trask, Kellen Mond type. Do they take it here? Because then you take him with a first round pick, and then you get the fifth round option on him, and or do they basically just fortify another spot on the roster here?
Yeah, it's rare to see a Super Bowl champion return 22 starters. So it is kind of a luxury pick to build depth in the future or potentially add something. You know, running back, I kind of think, is an option here. And Connor and I talked about this on the Weekside podcast last week. It's sort of the Super Bowl champion memorial, like running back pick. Like, hey, our roster's so good, we're just going to take a running back. But I do think that is an option here. But, you know, is there a quarterback that you like enough? I'm not so sure, but I have a feeling that there is one that Gary likes enough. So
there's so much Kyle Trask heat of late. I'm wondering if that's where Gary's going with
this.
But
is there? I don't like Kyle Trask. I like Davis Mills. I don't like Kyle Trask. Sorry to spoil that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you. I don't think you go quarterback here, because if you're Jason Light, any time that you've tried to be cute and ahead of the curve and somewhat pragmatic, it's blown up in your face. And the only thing that seems to be working is like this blindfolded foot on the gas pedal roster building strategy. And so I think you assume, and you know, whether it's wide receiver, you know, like someone like Rondale Moore is available, you know, and from Purdue, and just like somebody to fill that Antonio Brown role so you don't have to go back to that well, and you have the affordable contract on him, and, you know, you can let some of these other guys go after a little while, and you don't, you know, maybe replenish that position once Tom Brady's gone. I don't know. That's kind of a direction I'm going. I think I'm going, because, you know, again, you're so married to Tom Brady at this point that pivoting even in the slightest probably risks irking the ire of him in an Aaron Rodgers sort of way that you're probably not prepared to deal with. Because he is feeling a little froggy down there, and I think he'd weigh in on the quarterback situation if you drafted one.
I was also going to say that I think defensive tackle is potentially a need where you could get some depth. I mean, the last of the 22 starters to resign was Ndamukong Suh on a one-year deal. But I see that you guys already have Christian Barmore off the board, and I'm not sure that there's another defensive tackle that warrants going in the first round.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yep. You asked Ndamukong Suh to play 75% of your snaps last year at age 35, or 34 maybe, and it looks like, I mean, you know, without, you know, and you re-signed Steve McClendon, you know, some of those moves that you made and everything like that, but I agree with Jenny too, that's kind of a glaring hole too. And, you know, as good as Ndamukong Suh has been, I'm not saying he's getting older, blah, blah, blah. I mean, he hasn't missed a game since 2011, if I'm not mistaken. However, if you are looking down the near future there, that's a position too that you might want to fortify. I think that's a great point.
I do like the Iowa dude, Davion Nixon here.
I had him as a first round guy in my mock draft.
Yeah, I like him, and I do like the Washington guy, Levi Onwuzurike, I believe is how it's pronounced. I think stylistically he's not exactly what the Bucks have sort of built that defensive line around. I think he's more of a pure upfield three technique type guy, whereas Nixon can maybe do a few more things for you. I think that makes sense if you're not going with quarterback, and I don't think they're going quarterback, by the way. Obviously they'd have to absolutely love one of those guys. The receiver thing is really interesting, though, because you feel like they're having this stare down with Antonio Brown right now where, you know, they're kind of like they just expected him to come back on another, next to nothing deal because he has no other market, and it looks like Antonio Brown is trying to drum up. All it takes is one other team, and we Seahawks were a little bit vocal about it. We've heard Lamar Jackson bring it up. So can he generate a market and then ultimately get out of there? And perhaps what happens on draft night sort of guides what ends up happening there. But it feels like they really expected Antonio Brown back on basically a veteran's minimum plus incentives type of deal, and looks like that's not going to work out.
Yeah, I really like that direction. I think that's smart.
I agree, and there's still some really good receivers left. I mean, you know, we have Rondell Moore, you have Kadarius Toney, nobody's kind of taken him. Elijah Moore, who, that Ole Miss team, there's a lot of talent that's come from there. So I don't know. There's a lot of tasty options here.
Why don't we do, I love Rondale Moore, but I do kind of throw Rondale Moore quite rudely into more of a gadget weapon type of role at this point. I think he's going to be more, but I also think if you're the Bucks, you're probably not thinking, let's take a guy and, develop him over 2 or 3 years. To me, Kadarius Toney is an, look, I don't think Tony gets here, but by the same token, I think you're going to see receivers fall in this draft, and I think you're going to see one of these guys at 32 who we've talked about on these shows basically sitting there for the Bucks. So Kadarius Tony, if he is the guy who ends up falling, I mean, he just blows people away out of the slot. The amount of separation he creates is just obscene, and we've seen what Tom Brady does with guys like that over the years.
Yeah, I really like it. Let's slot it in.
Kadarius Toney, Florida wide receiver to the Tampa Bay Bucks, which brings us to the end of round one, and we will go on to the four teams without first-round picks. Weirdly enough, three of them pick right in a row. Seahawks at 56, Rams at 57, Chiefs at 58, and then the Texans at 67. We're going to fix everything that's wrong with the Texans with that 67th pick right there. But I did enjoy, in our little pre-show chat, Jenny was very nervous that she had not researched these picks correctly, but these picks are not meant to be researched. This is meant to be just throwing a random name at a team.
And, it's very difficult to project that far down the line.
You put it out there. It's no risk because no one should be expected to be correct on these picks. And then if you are correct, you get to pat yourself on the bat. That's the way it goes.
I like it. We'll give it a shot.
So we're starting with the Seahawks here. They signed Alden Smith. Alden Smith then had I'm quickly pulling up the latest on this. He is a worn out right now in Louisiana, and I don't know. I don't know if this is gonna work out with him in Seattle. So you're probably looking at the edge rushers again. You're also looking at the cornerbacks after losing Shaquille Griffin and losing Quentin Dunbar this past offseason. So you have some defensive needs. And then it seems like this is always the debate I have with myself because no one else in my house wants to talk about football with me. But when you're looking at this Seahawks team, we always say offensive line is a need. They haven't They've tried offensive linemen. They've drafted offensive linemen. They haven't worked out. I think it's just incredibly difficult to play the offensive line in front of Russell Wilson, who, I mean, his game is just built around this otherworldly improvisational ability, and that is tough for an offensive lineman who, you know, might have to block for 2 seconds, might have to block for 5 seconds. You're not sure where Wilson is within the pocket on each play. It's kind of like the complete opposite of the guys who you see thrive with Tom Brady, who, you know, just everything is completely expected and on schedule with him. So offensive line, I would put as a need, but maybe not as desperate a need as we sort of say on an annual basis. It kind of, if I could circle back to further dig myself into this hole that I've already started, blocking for Russell Wilson right now feels like what blocking for Ben Roethlisberger in like the late 2000s was, where he's just going to hold the ball for a while and you're going to give up sacks, and people are going to be like, oh, why do you give up so many sacks? And it's like, well, it's hard to block for this long sometimes.
No, that's a good explanation, Gary. I would say, yeah, I was going to say cornerback, offensive line, defensive line would be the three needs. I mean, I think it depends on which offensive linemen are there. You know, there are some that you could pair better with that unique skill set necessary to block for Wilson. But there's also a real need at corner that's a little bit glaring. So I think that could be a possibility here as well.
I agree. I think there could be some fun, you know, there could be some fun guys here. I mean, you know, your guy Sam Cosmi could sink this far.
Hey.
I mean, you know, and that could be a guy. But like, now, again, my apologies to everybody here because I'm about to butcher like 35 names here. But like Dylan Raddins from North Dakota State, you know, probably falls within that range. And even like someone like, oh gosh, now I'm going to sound like super unprepared, but Quinn Miners from,
oh, the D2 guy,
the UW Whitewater guy, that's just been like crushing it. You know, that's another guy that's around, that's probably around there. I mean, you know, I don't know how they have them stacked here, but similarly, you know, you look at the edge group there, and there's, you know, I think that there's probably some value there too. Jenny mentioned corner, which I think that's certainly got to be a consideration too. I mean, if you're at the point where you let some of these guys walk and you're running the system you're running, I mean, at some point that's got to be replenished. And I know that they do it better in the middle rounds than anybody else in the NFL, but you know, you do have to probably sniff around there too.
Quinn Miners is really interesting to me at this spot. I don't know why I'm branding John Schneider as this, but this just feels like a spot where he's going to take one of those small school guys that the reports immediately afterwards will be like, oh, you know, two other GMs called him to say that was the guy they were targeting, and they can't believe they took him. And that happens anytime someone from like a non-FBS school ever gets picked on day two. Robert Rochelle, the Central Arkansas cornerback, is another guy who I very much like. He's just super interesting. He's just, you know, the athletic testing was just something from another planet. And then on top of that, he's a guy who played a lot of offensive football in high school. He's sort of still learning the position of cornerback at this point. Those were the two guys I kind of had circled as possibilities in the spot. So, you know, the Seahawks get that nice bump of everyone saying like, oh, that was my guy.
Also, similar to the Patriots pick last year with Kyle Duggar from Lenoir Rhine, right? It's like, where is this school? And everyone's Googling it and then talking about how only Belichick could find this guy. So kind of similar, Gary.
Perfect. And everybody's got Ali Marpet fever after the Super Bowl. So
let's
know, just saying.
Let's do it. Let's do Quinn Miners to the Seahawks here. Yeah. We can enjoy all the D2 tape that gets thrown up on NFL Network or whatever channel you end up watching. That brings us to the Rams at 57. When I think Rams, they lost some pieces in the defensive backfield. The thing that I've just found incredibly strange with the Rams the last couple of years is, and you've heard McVay mention this a couple times, he really wants stability at center. He wants that guy who can, you know, sort of be that steadying force in the middle of that line. John Sullivan retired, and they had drafted Brian Allen on day three a couple years ago, and Brian Allen was going to be the guy to step in and replace Sullivan, and it just didn't work out. And then he was banged up last year and ended up not doing anything in 2020. They had Austin Blythe move to center, and Blythe had a pretty good season. Now Blythe gets away and signs with the Chiefs, so you have this hole at center again, and obviously this is a spot in the draft, since the Rams will never again have a first round pick. This is the kind of spot in the draft where you can maybe find a center, like Josh Myers, the Ohio State guy, is someone who sort of jumps out here. Drew Dahlman from Stanford might be around in this approximate area here. I don't think a Landon Dickerson or a Creed Humphrey is still on the board at this point.
Yeah, I think interior offensive line makes a lot of sense. I mean, heck, it seems like there's a run on this position because we just have the Seahawks taking Quinn Meinerz, and maybe there's some post-draft story about how they scooped up the Rams guy before the Rams could get him.
Even better, the most talked about pick of the draft, Quinn Meinerz to the Seahawks at 56. Changed everything we thought we knew about the 2021 draft. I want to do Josh Myers. I've rudely started typing it before I confirmed it with you guys. I want to do Josh Myers here to the Rams as sort of the guy who would be around at this spot, who they can maybe that's the answer. Maybe that's the answer for the next 5 years at that spot, like Sean McVay's been looking for.
You've got my sign off. You're the Sean McVay in this scenario, and I'm the Les Snead.
Right. I'm floating around in the Jif peanut butter pool, and I'm enjoying the pick, but if I had to raise one objection, I would say that if Jabril Cox from LSU is there, you are still in desperate need of off-ball coverage, off-ball linebackers with coverage ability, and he's tremendous at that, and he could be around there. But I'm not going to bring that up to you during the draft. I'm going to anonymously complain about it to the media when I'm looking for my own GM job, and Cox ends up being kind of a Darius Leonard breakout star kind of guy. So I will do that on my own time. I will float in the pool and enjoy myself in the meantime. So
Jif peanut butter pool. Now that would have been good.
Yeah. That pool's getting more delicious with each pick here. We have the Chiefs at 58. They just found the answer at left tackle, I guess. I shouldn't say I guess. Orlando Brown's a good left tackle. So that was very rude of me to put that kind of inflection on I guess there. So I take that back. But right tackle's still a question to me. Mike Remmers, I guess, is going to be the guy going into the year. I don't know how great they feel about that. Other than that, I mean, it's like we're talking offense with this team. Sammy Watkins got away. Do you have that X receiver type to put out there? It's nice to have, but it just seems like anything to do offensively is a luxury. But by the same token, I don't know if you look at this defense and say, like, boy, here's a desperate need here. I mean, they've needed to get more athletic at the linebacker spot. They might have it. William Gay was a guy they took day two last year. He was sort of a guy who was not on everyone's draft board for various reasons, but they sort of took the chance on him on day two, and I would assume they're still going to try and develop him as sort of the guy who's going to fill that need for an athletic linebacker. And when you're looking at the rest of the roster, Snead had a really nice season kind of out of nowhere. I think Chavarius Ward is another solid quality corner there. I don't know if there's a desperate need on defense here.
I agree. Like, going through their defense for the team needs series that we did last week, there's a lot to like, and there's a lot of developing guys on, like, mid-round contracts. Like, this defense is kind of healthy. I don't know if you're going to find the edge presence that you're probably hoping for at some point in this place in the draft. And I think if you read, the focus is to continue to outscore everybody like you have been. And maybe there's a dynamic weapon here at some point to kind of replace Sammy Watkins and keep them in overdrive. Because at this point, why would you, I don't think anything else really helps you as much. And you're trying to just get yourself better at what you're already the best at.
Yeah, I agree. Somebody that could play on the outside receiver position. You know, I do still think an offensive lineman is on the table. My first reaction when they made the Brown trade was like, okay, they're done. But as you laid out, Gary, I mean, they still do have a need there. And, you know, I could see them taking another guy there. But I do think that receiver would help them the most right now.
All right, if we are looking at the receivers at this point, I think you want a big-bodied guy. I mean, they have a Mecole Hardman as kind of like the I guess Tyreek Hill duplicate is how you'd kind of classify him. So I don't know if they, you know, if a Rondale Moore, De'Ami Brown were sitting there at this point. I don't know if that's the kind of guy you go with. Boy, they really wish they had kept that 31st pick and could have taken Terrace Marshall Jr. That would have just made everyone go wild here. I'm just looking through the receivers. Tim Ryan Terry out of Florida State's a guy I like. He's sort of a little bit raw, but he certainly can get downfield. I think he fits here just as a guy who, like, you don't need him to catch 90 passes last year. You just need him to sort of provide that threat that he's maybe going to have one or two 40-plus yard catches. I shouldn't say every week, but maybe every month. And that just sort of has that enough of a threat to keep a little bit of the heat off of Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce at this point.
Yeah, that sounds like a good pick. And as we were discussing earlier, because this is a deep receiver class and because a lot of teams think they can get a receiver in the second round, I do think some guys are going to be pushed down because teams will prioritize other positions that might be of equal need in the first round. And so there should be a lot of guys available, I think, that can be difference makers in the second round. And also part of, you know, playing into their decision, I'm sure. I mean, of course, if you have a chance to get Orlando Brown and can make a deal there, that's of course you're going to make that move. But also then you know, we can get a good guy in the second round. Don't have to get Terrace Marshall, Gary, in round one.
They're just going to be weeping in that draft room day two when they realize what's gotten away from them. All right, I want to pencil in Tamarion Terry. I think he might be a little bit of a reach in round two, but I believe in him. And I can say that and know that if it doesn't work out, I'm protected enough to not look completely foolish. And if it does work out, I'll play back this clip for years.
Just flying it in the face of one Tutu Atwell or Cornell Powell or Amari Rodgers or Daz Newsome. You're all special players, even if Gary doesn't think so.
That brings us to round three, and the final team that is coming on the board here is the Houston Texans at 67. And I was playing around with metaphors in my head, and I want to make clear in this metaphor, Nick Caserio's family and his pets and all of his important cherished possessions have gotten out of the house. But it's kind of like he's just looking at this towering inferno that his home has become, and he's just standing there with a glass of water and being like, huh, how do I figure this out? How are we going to solve this problem here? They need everything. I mean, running back, no. Wide receiver, you're probably satisfied enough with what you have there, and you have a left tackle. I think they kind of need a completely revamped defense. Zach Cunningham, I guess, is a guy you would say is something of a cornerstone there. It's the fact that they had Romeo Crennel there last year, who, you know, again, these Patriots-style guys, you want to be able to manufacture the pass rush so that you don't have to spend big money on these edge rushers. But, you know, they have that system. They also have J.J. Watt, who is still, you know, not classic J.J. Watt, but still a really good pass rusher. And they still had just no pass rush last year. And I don't know what the answer is at this point. They need everything.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to name the things that the Texans don't need than the things that they do need, which you pointed out. So it is impossible to guess what their pick would be, not just because it's impossible to pick a mid-round not impossible, difficult to pick a third round pick accurately, but there's just so many directions they could go because they have so many holes to fill.
Yeah, in a way, if you're Caserio, it's a little bit liberating in that you could probably close your eyes and spin around a bunch of times and then remove your blindfold and just hurl a dart at the board, and like anything's going to be fine, right? Like it's a person that can't leave. And if you're in Houston, that's probably very hard to come by at this point. So, you know, you get to keep them, you know?
I was looking at the edge guys. This is probably a range for like Ronnie Perkins from Oklahoma, who again is probably a guy who he's a little more of like a four inside technique guy on passing downs, and maybe that kind of fits what they're going to do defensively. I'm not even sure exactly what they're going to do defensively with Lovie Smith as the new defensive coordinator there at this point. Is this going to be a classic cover two type of thing? Cover two is kind of back in vogue, but not the Tampa two they played all those years in Chicago.
But is that a thing where, you know, you look at someone like Jabril Cox who can cover? Like, are you trying to get like a linebacker who can drop back and screw things up? Like, you know, you're not going to find a Brian Urlacher anywhere, and I'm not comping those, so please don't say that I'm doing that. But like, you know, it seems like every indication is that Lovie Smith has said multiple times, like, I'm just mad that I couldn't run my defense in college, and I'm going to start running my defense again in the pros. And, you know, much to the horrified look on all of our faces, that's like, well, probably shouldn't run Tampa 2 again. But if they do, I mean, you're going to need coverage linebackers. You're going to need everything. But, you know, I sound as dejected as I had to be. You know, it's like when you're making a shopping list for your daughter's party at Costco and you're just like, we're just not prepared for any of this. Like, we're going to have to start from the beginning, you know?
I'm looking at this. I mean, so let's say theoretically they're going with some variation of the old Tampa 2. I mean, Zach Cunningham is a guy, you've signed him. He's there. He kind of fits what you want to do here. You brought in Kemu Grugier-Hill, who, I don't know, like, good special teamer. I guess you're going to play him at linebacker here. And I don't know if you're doing that. Whitney Mercilus, I like Whitney Mercilus a lot. He's not quite what he was in the heyday of Watt and Clowney and Mercilus, sort of in that that diamond front they used to run. They just don't really have anyone else on the edge. Shaq Lawson's not an edge guy. I mean, he plays the edge, but he's not like a dynamic. It just, none of this personnel fits what theoretically they're going to do. I do like Charles O'Menahue, by the way, but not that much.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
maybe just pass with this pick. Maybe just, we'll figure it out in 2022.
If you're the Texans, you got to complete the sweep and wait long enough so that the team behind you gets to run a pick ahead, you know, and then just look completely incapable, which, you know, is just kind of par for the course at this point. So
I guess edge makes sense. I mean, in theory, any team can use an edge rusher.
Or if you're Caserio, do you try to get your Tom Brady? Do you get Ian Book here? You know, really try to freak everybody out, or, you know, Felipe Franks or something like that, you know?
Wow. This is a really intriguing pick, I have to say.
I think we should go with some of the people that Gary said that sounded sensible, and I'll stop trying to make this about me. So.
But Connor, what about a running back?
Hey, if you're going to use that wishbone offense, I mean, you need a third running back. Ronnie, again, I don't even think Ronnie Perkins is. I'm looking at the edge guys who are in this range. None of them really fit what you would do with a Tampa 2 anyway. Rashad Weaver, maybe that's who I gave in my mock draft.
Yeah, I was going to say Weaver kind of works there a little bit. Patrick Jones, too, you know, is another similar size.
Yep.
You know, maybe one of those guys, you know.
Your favorite pit guy is who they will end up taking here, which Weaver seems to be slightly preferred by most people. They're fairly similar players, though. Let's see. Rashad Weaver. I will duplicate my own mock draft, and when it's right, I will get double the celebration.
We'll make sure to credit you, Gary.
Hey, you and I, the last time we comboed on a day 2 and 3 mock draft, we hit on a couple.
We did. Know? That was super
Chase
exciting.
Chase Winovich.
Yep.
We got that one. I remember that one. That felt good. You know.
It always feels good. It feels like a pack break or something. Where like, you know, it's like common, crap, and like, oh, look at this one. We got it. So yeah, we're doing that again this year, by the way. I don't know if anyone's told you that, but we're doing the day 2 mock that I don't know. Well, let's try to get 3. I think 3.5 is no. Yeah, 3.5 is an over under we should shoot for. Let's get the over.
Dig it.
All right, guys, this does it for me for draft-centric podcasts, or at least pre-draft-centric podcasts. But you guys have another one coming up on the Weekside podcast coming out Tuesday. So, I don't know, get to work? I guess that's how we finish this up.
Yeah, that sounds good, Gary. Connor said a minute ago, more to come.
Well, Jenny and I, we treated you guys with my mock draft the week before, Jenny's mock draft last week. Who knows? Maybe it'll just be like, I'm going to go to the grocery store and find somebody to give us another mock draft to do. And we'll just do that, you know? It'll be great.
Great plan, Connor.
Mock draft.
The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Vrentis, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Mark Ravick is the emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed as well as the feeds for the Weekside Podcast and the Albert Breer Show. They're all for free on Apple Podcasts. And once you do subscribe, leave a rating and review for all of them. It really does help other people find the shows, which are also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.